This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Most of us know little about what life is like inside America's prisons. Yet we all have a great stake in what happens there. After all, many convicted criminals will return to society transformed, for better or worse, by prison culture. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Justice Department reported America's prison population has reached a new all-time high. More than 1 million people are behind bars. And our incarceration rate is now second only to Russia's. So we wanted to take a look at prison life from the inside. Today we have the first in a series of reports from prison about prison life. We asked Wilbert Rideau to be our correspondent. Since 1975, he's been the editor of The Angolite, the uncensored bi-monthly magazine of the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. He's been an inmate at Angola for 33 years, serving a life sentence for murder. During his tenure as editor, The Angolite has won a Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award, a George Polk Award, several National Magazine Award nominations, and an American Bar Association Silver Gavel Award for its, quote, outstanding contribution to public understanding of the American system of law and justice. We figured you might be wondering what Angola's warden thinks of Rideau speaking on Fresh Air. Warden John Whitley says these reports are in the spirit of the prison's outreach programs, which are designed to educate the public. In fact, we asked Warden Whitley to explain why he gave his approval to Rideau's reports.
Well, I actually encouraged him to do it. I think he has a good knowledge of prison life, having spent 30 years in prison, and I think this is an opportunity to educate the public on what really goes on in a prison.
You know, I think some listeners will have the attitude that why would you trust a convicted criminal to report on anything, let alone life in prison?
Well, that's one of the things that people need to understand. Convicted criminals are people. They have committed crimes. They're doing their time. But they're still people. They have knowledge. They have insight. And they have information that I think the public would be interested to know.
Now, did you set any ground rules for Wilbert Rideau's reports to us from prison?
No. That's going to be between him and the radio station.
And why did you feel it was unnecessary to set any ground rules about that?
Well, Wilbert is the publisher of The Angolite. He's been doing that for, I guess, the last 15 years. And he's done a good job of it. He's shown that he can handle the job, and I have faith in him.
The Angolite is an uncensored prison publication. I think that's a pretty unusual thing in prison. Why has it remained uncensored? What's the philosophy behind that?
Well, the philosophy behind that is basically we want a prison newspaper or prison magazine that gives different views of prison. Some of the views, when I read it, I don't like it. It upsets me. But it's true. It's the way things are. And we're looking for something that just comes out with the truth.
What's an example of something that upsets you?
Well, I personally favor the death penalty. The Angolite, I think, recently, within the last year or two, ran a number of articles anti-death penalty focus. And it was not the way I believe, but what they had to say was something I felt needed to go out.
Where do you think of yourself as fitting in the spectrum of liberal to conservative on crime issues?
Conservative.
In what respect?
Again, it upsets me to see people victimized in the streets. I strongly believe in the death penalty. I think that violent crime needs to be stopped, and whatever we need to do, let's do it, but do it in a reasonable way and not just the feel-good legislation.
Angola is a maximum security prison. Would you give us a sketch of the kinds of crimes most of the inmates are there for?
Well, the inmates that we get at Angola are the ones who do the more serious crimes. We're talking murder, rape, aggravated kidnapping, armed robbery, and then some for burglary, robbery, a number of different crimes. We have approximately two-thirds of our inmate population right now doing either life or practical life.
And could you give us a sense of the age of the prisoners there, what the age range is, and what the racial and ethnic population is?
The average age of the inmate at Angola is 34, and our racial breakdown is approximately 75% black, 25% white.
Well, Warden, I want to thank you very much for your time.
Sure.
John Whitley is the warden of the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola.
Let me ask you. Okay, you said you were in a cell and you started trying to read, and you were teaching yourself more or less the first years of your educational process. Right. It was you teaching yourself on a catch-can basis. Right. Why? What made you? Because for a long time you wasn't interested, and then all of a sudden you. Why? What happened?
Well,
had you reached some low point or what?
Well, I think what it is that when you're at the bottom of that pit, and you realize you're at the bottom of that pit, and because I used to listen to guys, like a couple of guys, one guy named Henry Patterson, and another guy named Jody Milton. And I would listen, and one of them would come out and holler down the tears, says, you ever heard the word impeccable? And I said to myself, I said, man, what is that? You know? And I was very curious because of different words that I didn't even know what the hell it was. And I used to listen to the, talk shows on the radio, and they would come out with some words, and it was like, just landing in a foreign country, and you don't even understand the language that's being spoken. Well, that's the same thing if you don't have an education. How can you actually understand the meaning of words if you don't have an education?
That's John Boudreau, an inmate at the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. He spoke with Wilbert Rideau, the editor of the prison magazine, The Angolite. We'll be back with Wilbert Rideau after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Wilbert Rideau, he's an inmate at the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, where he edits the prison's award-winning news magazine, The Angolite. What are some of the education programs now at Angola?
Well, like I tell you, there's the basic GED program, which graduates about 100 GED graduates every year. And there's a literacy program for all those people. The academic program begins at the fifth grade level. So you've got a lot of people who can't read and write, and they can't meet that criteria. So there's a literacy program now in place to bring prisoners up to that minimal academic level. There's a vocational training program, which offers training to approximately 124 inmates in about six courses, welding and cooking and auto mechanics, carpentry and things like that. Inmates go full-time, and the courses last 1 to 2 years. Now, I'd like to say something. The VOTEC program here has been enormously successful because they've been monitoring the graduates since 1957, and only 12% of those with VOTEC training ever return to prison. And, that's not a perfect score, but 12%, that's pretty good recidivism rate. All told, though, you've only got 376 prisoners who are enrolled in programs, educational programs that's provided by the state of Louisiana, and that's inadequate because you've got 4,600 prisoners here. Of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody wants an education. I know one guy who's been here 30 years, and he still has the first grade education that he came here with 30 years ago. Everybody doesn't want an education. 90% of the prisoners here at this penitentiary, we're peculiar in the sense that we're consigned to die here. They're serving life sentences or sentences that preclude their ever leaving. So the thing about education is pursuing education because they feel that somehow or another it will prove useful in their life or that it'll affect them in some beneficial way. But when you're serving a life sentence with no pardon, no parole, no suspension of sentence, no nothing, you just, if your perception of your future is that you're going to suffer and die in prison, then the general attitude is you don't need a college degree to pick cotton for the rest of your life only to die in the prison cemetery.
So the people who are serving life sentences and don't expect to ever get out are less likely to participate in the education programs.
Well, I'm reluctant to say that because I'm serving a life sentence and I pursue an education. You have a substantial number of lifers who do. It varies. It's all with the individual. Those individuals who haven't succumbed to hopelessness and despair, those who can envision some potential future for themselves, those who haven't surrendered, so to speak, they will pursue an education because they want one to be able to function in a meaningful way once they get out of prison.
A federal grant called the Pell Grant funded higher education programs in many prisons, including in Angola. And that program was just cut by the crime bill that Congress passed. Would you describe what the Pell Grant funded at Angola?
At Angola, we've only had Pell Grant funded courses since 1992. And Warden Whitley came. He brought the Pell Grant. He brought two courses. It was computer and paralegal job training course. It wasn't higher education or college programs like, you know, a lot of people have been led to believe. It was just job training courses, two of them, and it was taught by two instructors. And right now there are 88 students in it.
What has the reaction inside Angola been to the end of the Pell Grant program?
A lot of disappointment. I mean, everybody from the warden on down, they're disappointed because people who work in prison, the people in prison know that the single biggest impact you can make on prisoners is education. And, you know, let's face it, most of these guys who are in prison from coast to coast, at some point in time, they're going back in your community as ex-convicts. And it's in your best interest. It's not a matter of being liberal or being conservative or being tough or being soft. It's a matter of self-preservation. You should want that guy, when he walks out of prison, to be a little better person than he was when he walked in.
When you first got to prison, did you take advantage of any education programs?
There wasn't any. There was nothing. Educational programs are a recent phenomenon. I mean, when I came to prison, there weren't any such opportunities. Keep in mind, I came here 33 years ago. In fact, when I came here, the general prison thinking was that educating a prisoner was a dangerous affair. Obviously, because they considered any literature other than religious was considered contraband. And they punished you, if they caught you, they punished you with 30 days on bread and water in a dungeon. So, you know, this gradually, this situation gradually changed, but that was the situation when I came here. And by the time educational programs did occur, which was late on in the 70s. Well, I had already pretty much educated myself.
Wilbert Rideau is the editor of The Angolite, the news magazine of the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, where Rideau is serving a life sentence. He'll be back with us in the second part of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Wilbert Rideau as we continue the first in a series of reports from prison about prison life. Our correspondent, Wilbert Rideau, has been an inmate at the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola for 33 years, serving a life sentence for murdering a teller during a bank robbery when Rideau was 19. Rideau has been reporting on prison life since 1975. He's the editor of the prison's uncensored, award-winning magazine, The Angolite. In 1992, Times Books published an anthology of articles by Rideau and the late Ron Wickberg, Rideau's former co-editor at The Angolite. Books never mattered to Rideau until he was in prison. He told me about the first books he read in prison that had an impact on him.
Well, I remember those distinctly. The first book I read was by Frank Yerby, and the name of it was Fair Oaks. It wasn't his best book. It's just the first one I read. And it was an antebellum novel. It was a novel about slavery in Louisiana. And it blew my mind. I'd never, ever in my life read anything like this or even knew of anything like this, this kind of experience of slavery. I mean, when I went to school, you know, they gloss over it in the textbooks. They talk about a civil war that took place, and yes, there were slaves, but it had no realness to it, no reality to anything that they were teaching us. And consequently, you don't really get it. But when I read that book, I read it and I said, Jesus, this really happened? You know, I mean, people really did this? And it blew me away. But it also opened the door to, it made me realize that, you know, there was an awful lot that I did not know. And consequently, what the effect it had on me was to push me and make me curious about everything, wanting to know what else is there that I don't know about this world I'm living in. I mean, here I am, I may be in prison, but that's where curiosity was born. It's just one of those things. The other book I read was Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. That had an effect on me because when I came here, you have to keep in mind, this was a long time ago, and prison was a very, very hard place to be in. And when you go to prison, people generally leave you. Your friends leave you, your relatives leave you, the church leaves you, everybody leaves you. They abandon you. And I read Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, followed by Anthem. And its whole philosophy of individualism and make you realize, you know, it was one that, it was about surviving. It provided the kind of philosophy I needed to help me survive the experience I was in of being alone. A tough environment.
I know you have a library inside the penitentiary. What's the library like?
Well, it's we have a central library at the main prison, supplemented by miniature libraries at each of the other units, satellite units around the penitentiary. All inmates have designated days and hours during which they can use the library, and they check out books just like any other place, and it operates much the same as any other library. But I talked to the librarian. I took the liberty of talking to the librarian. His name is Mark Wellman, and for him to explain it, some of what he does.
Mark, what kind of books do inmates read whenever they read?
I don't really think you can you can't classify them as inmates, you classify them as readers. They read pretty much what anybody in a public library would read. I found that out from my experience in here, that's what they do. They read a lot of fiction. You know, you can say that's escapism, but if you look at what people read in public libraries, they read a lot of fiction. In public libraries, they read a lot of romance novels. Here, the version of romance novel that's popular is the Western. They also read, better levels of fiction, bestseller type fiction, not too much of the real heavy serious fiction, but whatever's on the New York Times bestseller list, they're interested in that. At the same time, there's a lot of interest in nonfiction. It's not as much, but it's more intense. The people who read the nonfiction, you know, they pursue it. Black history, for instance, is really heavily read here, all the way from modern works to some of the older black historians like W. E. Du Bois or J. A. Rogers from that time period.
Okay, are there any differences? Do you find any differences between, say, like the men who are sentenced to death on death row and say the men who, you know, the guys on death row, they're kind of
the future looks dim, whereas inmates who are trustees in minimum security, their future would be more optimistic. Does that dictate some kind of difference in what they read, or is it still the same?
In death row, I believe they read more magazines, stuff that is a passing interest. If they're reading a lot of religious or introspective stuff, they're getting that from I don't know where. They're not requesting it from us. They, you know, we have librarians that go there and give them opportunities to request books. We don't get a lot of requests from them.
Is there anything else that you would like to say about inmates reading books and using the use of your library?
There's a big interest in forensics for people who are working on their cases, and they want to learn the knowledge to pursue their cases in court. Foreign languages is what surprises me, the number of people that are teaching themselves foreign languages.
Which one in particular?
Spanish is the most popular because that's the fastest growing language in the United States. But people have pen pals. And I have people that taught themselves Korean. There's people who are learning Arabic and trying to learn how to write it. Computer science. They have a college level computer class upstairs. It's not that many.
For now.
What's that?
For now.
For now, yeah. That's one of the best things they have here, I think. And it's not that great a number of inmates actually enrolled in it, but they make a great big use of computer-related materials. But not only are people in that class aren't the only ones. I know of inmates in cell blocks who teach themselves computer programming from a book without a computer. And I mean, you think that'd be impossible to learn, but the progress they make is amazing with that.
What about newspapers and magazines? What types are more popular among those who frequent your library?
The local newspapers, everybody's got.
From their hometown.
Yes, they try to get something as close as they can to that. There's a very high percentage of blacks in this institution, so black magazines like Ebony and Jet, Ebony Man, things like that are popular. Art magazines, because we have a lot of painters here and wood carvers. They use those. It runs the gamut.
Essentially, what I'm gathering from what you say, what you've said so far, is that essentially your library, the operation of your library, and the reading taste of those who frequent your library is essentially the same as any public library in the country. In other words, being a prison librarian, operating a prison library, so to speak, there's no real distinction other than the fact that it happens to be inside of a prison.
Well, it's probably more heavily used per capita than a public library outside of prison would be, because this is one of the few things available that they can do on their own, and it's self-directed.
They have plenty of time to read.
Yeah, but I mean, they can pursue what they want to read.
That's Mark Wellman, the prison librarian at the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. He spoke with Wilbert Rideau, the editor of the prison's magazine, The Angolite, and an inmate at Angola. We'll be back with Wilbert Rideau after this break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about books and education inside prison with Wilbert Rideau. Wilbert, do you have any idea what some of the most popular books are now at the library?
It would have to be the Grisham novels. John Grisham, I mean, he's the most popular writer in my world and your world right now. And right now, his latest novel, The Chamber, and then there's The Client, which, that was the last one, and The Farm is still popular. But it's mostly his novels. I mean, there are a lot of other books that people read. For a while it was Nathan McCall's Make Me Want to Holler, but right now, over and above everything, is Grisham novels.
Does being able to read carry any status among the prisoners?
Status? No. No, it doesn't. While not being able to read carries a certain amount of a certain stigma, just like in your world, being able to read doesn't carry status. Of course, it's kind of relative, because when I first came to prison, the majority of people couldn't read and write. In fact, all I had was an eighth grade education. I was considered well educated compared to everyone else, and I was able to earn a living and support myself. I was able to support myself by reading mail for guys and writing letters for them. That's the way I supported myself initially. So, you know, it's knowing how to read just goes to giving you an ability that I think everybody needs.
Wilbert, if you hadn't been sent to prison, do you think you would have ever discovered books and discovered writing?
No, I don't think so. But I don't know.
Right.
Nobody does.
Right.
You never will.
It's one of those incredible paradoxes when somebody loses their freedom and discovers the life of the mind.
People generally grow as a result of trauma. I mean, it's the big things in life. You know, accidents. You find people who have close calls to death with death after they emerge from a car accident, and they have a more profound appreciation for life and everything afterwards. That's the nature of life. We grow as a result of a lot of time crisis.
Are there a lot of prisoners who you know who haven't been changed by the prison experience in terms of their interest in books, in thinking, in learning more?
There are some people here who you understand why prisons are built.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, you know, that's just the way it is. There are some people who haven't changed at all. I mean, there are some people who, in fact, are even worse. But that's people. You've got the whole spectrum. From those who want to change to those who don't care. I see no reason to change.
Well, Wilbert Rideau, thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Wilbert Rideau is the editor of The Angolite, the uncensored award-winning magazine of the Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola, where Rideau is serving a life sentence. An anthology of essays from The Angolite called Life Sentences is published by Times Books. Wilbert Rideau's report from prison was produced by Naomi Person. This is Fresh Air.